The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Is this volume about right? Okay. So this talk will be, I hope appropriately, about the Buddhist perspective on romance, you know, as I understand it. The Buddha maybe didn't teach a lot about romance. He led a band of monastics, and who by definition were single. But he did teach suffering. Now, this is not an exact quote. Why are you laughing? This is not an exact quote, but the popular translation of what he said once is, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the release of suffering. But that can cover a lot of ground, so I'm going to try to apply that to romance, our relationships. I'm going to start with a quote from the Pali Canon, specifically, in case you like to look this sort of thing up, the Sutta Nipata 3.12. And it goes, "What the world calls happiness, that the noble ones, that is, enlightened beings, declare to be suffering. And what the world calls suffering, that the noble ones have found to be happiness." See how difficult it is to understand the Dharma. So, why is what most people call happiness suffering from a Buddhist perspective? So, what is this happiness, the way most people think of it? So I want to think of it as not a thing, but a process. And a process that can be broken down into, shall we say, three parts. Part one is craving, an object of desire. Part two is getting what we crave. And then knowing that little ping of pleasure that happens when we get what we crave. And part three, is clinging to what you want after you've gotten it. For the Buddha, this was a recipe for suffering. And then a second part, what the world calls suffering that the noble ones have found to be happiness. So what the world calls suffering is renunciation, giving up. And that is where the Buddha taught that happiness lies, letting go, letting go, letting go. Ajahn Chah, a famous abbot of a monastery in Thailand, once said, "If you let go a little bit, you will know a little bit of freedom. If you let go a lot, you will know a lot of freedom. And when you let go completely, you will know complete freedom." So I'd like to add that suffering, it's not renunciation, but that feeling of sadness or hurt in the heart, maybe that doesn't seem like happiness at all, but it can be step one on the way to happiness, because that suffering is what leads us sometimes to the path, to beginning this long journey of looking inward and seeing what causes suffering and what causes release from suffering, and starting to undo our habits. So if this isn't, if what I said isn't quite convincing yet, let's try looking at it this way. Speaking specifically of romance or a couple's relationship. In your mind, maybe look back on all the moments in your life that have had something to do with romance. Wanting it, thinking about it, planning to attain it, carrying out the plan, doing what we can think of to attain romance, then experiencing the romance, and then maybe, if that's happened, losing the romance and all the feelings that are associated with all of these steps, each one. And then put all these moments on a scale. The happy ones on one side and the unhappy ones on the other side. And see which way the scale tilts. I would say I've spent more time, more moments, like the song goes, wishing and hoping and dreaming, than I have having and enjoying. So why do we do this? Why do we put ourselves through this often painful and occasionally enjoyable process? So I'm going to suggest three reasons. One is culture. You look at all the advertising and the movies and the top 40 songs that we've heard or seen or listened to in our lives. Over and over again, starting at a very early age, and we start to believe it. I remember, so I go back to the 60s, and I remember one song by Petula Clark that goes, I couldn't live without your love. And I thought it was a good song. I enjoyed it back then. But if we believe it, isn't that a kind of poison? Another reason we go through this whole rigmarole is our hormones, our DNA, our physical bodies. So we are naturally prone to this. But I think we underestimate how powerful our hormones are. So we see a person that we think of as attractive, and our hormones go to work on us. And we think, this person is so smart, so kind, so good-hearted. And we have so much in common. And we think this every time. and no matter how many times we're disillusioned, the next time around, we think the same thing again. So we don't really see how these forces are working on us. There's a third reason that we go through this. And one is that sometimes we do get what we want, whether it's romance or anything else. Sometimes we do. And every time we do, there's a ping of pleasure that happens. And sometimes that pleasure can be very, very strong. And so, and it never lasts very long. So we want it again, and we want more of it. And sometimes we do get it again. And this reinforces our expectation that we can have this and reinforces what becomes a habit of craving. So those are the three reasons I think we all go through this. Culture, our DNA, our physical bodies, our hormones, and then development of a habit of wanting. Again, what the Buddha called a recipe for suffering, because we are disappointed. I think more often than otherwise. I'd like to quote a Zen teacher, the late Charlotte Joko Beck, from her book, Nothing Special, Living Zen. My favorite Dharma book, by the way, of all time. She said, "Perhaps we get a new partner who's just wonderful." She adds parenthetically, "Particularly in relationships, delusion reigns supreme." Then she adds, "We marry or live with him or her, and whoops." If we're practicing, this whoops can be immensely interesting and instructive. So the whoops, the disappointment, or the hurt can be more than an occasion for suffering. It can be an occasion for learning. So in my own life, I have found it very helpful both to be in a relationship and to be out of a relationship. So when I'm in a relationship, that's helpful because my partner, the other person, functions like a mirror of my own habits or tendencies. So any way that I am not perfect or realized, any rough edges or immaturity that still exist in me is going to cause suffering in that other person. And then that's going to bounce back at me. And I can either get irritated back, or I can choose to look in that mirror and say, "Why is all this happening?" And it is that moment, that difficult moment, that I can, if I'm willing to look, that I can see where I still need to grow, where, in what ways I still need to learn. Usually we look away from the mirror so we don't change. Because looking at that mirror is painful. Like Gillis sometimes said, and like I think this quote comes from Zorba the novel, Zorba the Greek, "Self-knowledge is rarely good news." But if we're going to be on the path, you know, there's no escaping it. We got to look. So that's why being in relationship has been helpful to me. Being single has also been helpful. My parents were great people in their own ways. Very honest, good values, which they tried to teach to us. But they didn't know how to get along with each other. So it was a long and painful marriage. And their ability to parent me and my siblings was accordingly, less ideal than it could have been. And so I grew up with a certain level of poor self-esteem. and therefore loneliness, a certain lack of social skills in certain ways. And so my big quest, my main quest, I would say, has been to learn how to be emotionally independent or self-sufficient. And so being single has been my best teacher along that line. Maybe it's a weekend evening and you're home alone. So is that okay? Or is it a cause for feeling some suffering, some loneliness? So looking at my life at those times and learning to say, this is my life as it is right now. And maybe some people have it better and some people have it worse, but really, what's the difference? And seeing the trajectory of my life from birth to that moment and looking at it in terms of dependent origination, cause and effect, then I can see, of course, this is why my life is the way it is. And it's no point in wishing it was any different, because it wasn't. But from this point onward is all that matters. So we learn, and then really, I do have a very rich life, and wonderful activities that I engage in. And when I travel, you know what? It's always better traveling by myself. I can go exactly where I want to go, and for how long, and so forth. So really, life is just a travel, a journey from one place to another. If we can look at our lives that way. Charlotte Joko Beck also wrote, "We have the illusion that other people are going to make us happy, that they're going to make our lives work. Until we wear out that illusion, there will be no real solution. Other people are for enjoyment, not for any other purpose. They are part of the wonder that life is. They're not here to do anything for us." So, they aren't here to fulfill or complete us. They aren't here to save us. They aren't here to bolster our self-esteem. And no one can do those things for us but ourselves. So just to enjoy. And to act as a mirror to us. And so I've written here in my notes, "Do not go into a shell. Stride fearlessly into the social landscape and enjoy people. Be hurt sometimes. Learn and grow." The talk. So I know this talk sounds like a dire warning against romance. And that's certainly what most of the talk was. But I do want to add a little bit of counterbalance to it. So the Buddha did give us two sets of precepts. There was the longer set of precepts for his monastics, and then there was a set of five precepts for lay people. So he did acknowledge that it's okay to be a lay person and to be married. The difference is, well, there are other lots of differences, but the main difference is that for lay people, the third precept is I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. So any kind of sexual conduct that is likely to promote unhappiness or suffering in yourself or another person. For monastics, the third precept is to refrain from sexual activity altogether. So he's giving us permission to be lay people married in romance. The other counterweight I want to give to the rest of this talk is that occasionally we do see successful marriages. Why are you laughing? I'm going to give one example. A couple that I only just met that I didn't get to know. But I changed planes once in Las Vegas, and I had some time between my between flights. So I went to the food court, past the slot machines, past the cigarettes, went to the food court, got my meal, and the tables were all taken. So I ended up sitting at a table with an elderly couple from the Midwest, and I got to talking with them. And learned something about their life. They lived on a farm and in a, away from cities. And I don't remember any of the specifics about their farm life, but I remember the generalities quite well. They didn't have a lot. They lived a simple life. They felt like they were surrounded by nature. And I said to them, "It sounds idyllic." And she said to me, "It is." And part of the reason I thought was each other. I mean, they were classic Midwesterners, very conservative in their dress and restrained in their appearance, very present, very articulate, no drama. And the way they related, talked to me and related to each other, neither one seemed dominant over the other. Neither one had a stronger personality, from what I could see. They seemed like a very lovely couple, and many years later I'm remembering them. So we've all met a few people like this. So I hold that out as a possibility for those who wish to move toward that direction. And if we get there, what I'd like to suggest: enjoy. But when that ping of pleasure happens, the enjoyment, watch what's happening inside of yourself and see if that's turning into an expectation or a habit toward further craving. And if it is, pause and let go. Enjoy the moment as it happens without expectation toward the future, or much less craving. And then, if we can do that, I think our relationships will be a lot healthier and more long-lasting. Thank you.